Welcome to the Gentle Sleep Podcast, a podcast hosted by me, Claire, a holistic sleep consultant.
And me, Josh, Claire's husband, and just a regular guy.
This podcast is for all of you who have felt overwhelmed by the conflicting information around baby sleep. It's for parents who want to feel empowered to follow their intuition and everyone who has longed for a sleep solution that wasn't cried out. This podcast will help you to feel encouraged, empowered, and better equipped to handle bedtime battles and naptime nightmares with each listen. If you'd like to find out more about me or have access to all of my free sleep tips and tricks, make sure you're following me on Instagram at The Gentle Sleep Coach. Hello, everyone. I am here with Sarah. Hi, Sarah. How are you going?
Good, Claire. How are you?
I'm good. So, Sarah, I'm going to get you to chat to us about who you are, but you're an occupational therapist and now you work with mothers transition into motherhood and you deal with sensory overwhelm and overload, which is how I found you because randomly you came up on my explore feed. How good is Instagram for that? And I was scrolling through and I was like, oh my gosh, yes, I feel this sensory overwhelm with my own children all the time. Mm. It's like, you know, you're making dinner and you have for me, it's whenever Oscar stands on my feet. into overdrive. Josh always laughs at me, but I'm like, I cannot handle when there's like noise. I'm cooking dinner, Theo screaming, and Oscar tries to climb up me and stands on my feet. It like squishes the skin, and I'm like, I am going to explode. Like it is up to here. And I'd never seen anyone talk about it before. So I like went and binged your page and I was like, this is incredible. And then I found you had a workshop, which I did, which I adored. And it was so helpful, which is how we've ended up here on a podcast together. So
amazing.
I know, hilarious, the powers of social media. So what I might just get you to do is like, let's just introduce you. Like, who are you and how did we find ourselves in this kind of role or position?
Yeah, it's a big topic in itself, not me personally, but how I got here.
Yes.
So thanks, Claire. Thank you for having me. I love chatting about this.
So welcome.
And I'm so glad that we connected. So,
so fun.
I'm Sarah. As you said, I'm an occupational therapist and I am a proud mom of two little kids. I've got a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old. Who I would say are deeply feeling, very expressive, sensitive little ones themselves. I'm a wife, I'm a friend, I'm a school mom, I'm all these other things as well. We're talking here today about a mum and an OT. I am on Matrescence Matters on Instagram, which is how we connected.
Yes, and we'll tag you in the show notes as well so everyone can come and binge your page too.
Well, thanks. But I guess I landed here in this work supporting mothers, having experienced my own really deep shifts and transformation in motherhood. So before starting Matrescence Matters and Motherhood Support Occupational Therapy, I was an OT for 12 years before I had kids. I worked in occupational rehab and mental health, and I really valued my career, and that was something that was really, really important to me. I held a lot of external validation, credibility, self-worth, all that type of thing was really tied up there. And becoming a mother really shifted that for me. Obviously I wasn't receiving a lot of that external validation. You know, I've all of a sudden got a baby who, let's be fair, doesn't really tell us when we're doing a good job.
In fact, don't thank you ever.
No, ever. And so I was kind of on this like a mouse wheel, I don't even know what they're called, like a wheel where I was just trying to like work out who I was. Despite the fact that I loved my work, I wasn't really kind of motivated to return back to that, which was very bizarre for me. And then I found the term matrescence.
I love it.
Totally validated me and gave me so many aha moments. So I went through my own personal journey of matrescence and exploration and finding out who I was and looking at my values and really applying some of these OT interventions into my own life.
So cool.
And I don't, you know, like as an OT, I couldn't see the forest for the trees, you know, like yeah. Until I had this word to explain what I was going through, I felt a little bit lost. So basically I took my own experience of matrescence, my own application of occupational therapy interventions. Since finding it over 12 months ago, I have done a heap of training and education in, you know, perinatal mood disorders, maternal mental health. And then a lot of occupational therapy practice in pediatrics specifically is around sensory integration, right?
It is.
Sensory processing. And I look for it constantly in my kids. But then I started looking at it as a mother and I just, you know, so many light bulbs went off. And it is true in motherhood, we're absorbing so much more sensory information than we are used to, than we're trained to. There are other factors that impact how our brain functions after pregnancy and birth. And I just went to applying it, doing my own thing and kind of took a leap.
I love
it. And I think because career is so important to me, I've really kind of taken the bull by the horns to make this work because I see such value in occupational therapy in this space and I see it as an area where we can really support mothers both privately and in primary healthcare too. So that's the reason why I'm here.
I love it. And I know that it just stood out so much to me as well, like just experiencing that sensory overwhelm myself. Like I know for sure Oscar is like a highly sensitive little guy. And I've been aware of that for so long and different sensory input is so overwhelming to him. Like we can't sing happy birthday ever. Or like when we were toilet training, I made the mistake of like celebrating. He'd gone to the toilet and he had the biggest meltdown, like so sensitive to stuff like that. So I've always been so aware of it. And then when I was going through your page, it was the same. It was like these light bulb moments. I was like, oh my gosh, like, yes, all of these things are really overwhelming from a sensory perspective. And I remember like trying to explain, like I was so excited when I found your page. I was like, this is like, and especially because so many of my clients, and we're going to unpack it, we'll talk about how just overwhelmed and it's like something snaps, like when their baby's so dysregulated overnight in particular. And I was like, oh my gosh, there is like, it's so right. Like so much of this is just sensory related. I know for myself and for clients, which is where I was so excited to talk to you. And we can unpack all that. It's so cool. I would love you to explain, if you wouldn't mind, the term matrescence. Now, why I ask this is because I knew of this term probably from being in the space, but literally like 10 minutes ago, I was just talking to Martinique and Mystique, who are two sleep consultants who work with me. And I was telling them about you. I'm like, she's got this awesome page, Matrescence Matters. And they were like, what the heck does matrescence mean? And they had never heard of it. And I was like, wow, how wild that you can be like in this space and a mom and you've never heard the term matrescence, because it was life-changing for me as well. Totally explained like so much of that tension. So how would you describe like what matrescence means for anyone who hasn't heard it before?
Oh, well, as of about 8 days ago, matrescence has entered into the Cambridge Dictionary.
So good.
So that's really exciting. Obviously, it is a term that is used, but the fact that it's now in a dictionary, I think just gives it a lot more credibility.
Yeah, like validation. And
So matrescence started in the 60s. An anthropologist, Dana Raphael, coined the term. She kind of said the birth of a mother or the birth of a child doesn't make a mother out of a woman. That requires study and time.
Yeah.
She also coined the term doula, funnily
enough. Ah, so clever woman.
Yeah, a lot more in that space. And then a couple of decades later, Aurelie Athen, who is a clinical psychologist, researcher and lecturer at Columbia University, kind of revived this term matrescence. So she describes matrescence as the developmental process that a woman goes through in becoming a mother.
Wow.
So this developmental process starts at preconception before we even have the baby. You know, it goes through preconception, conception, pregnancy, birth, and beyond, there is no definitive time frame to matrescence, but it's the evolving of oneself. I like to say alongside the evolution of our children and the growth of our children, because
definitely
each time our child goes through a developmental process, if we're a first-time mum, that's, I guess, the most formative time of matrescence, but we are also evolving in that space too. We are a mum of an infant, and then we learn how to be a mum of a toddler, and et cetera, you get the idea?
Yeah.
So there are five domains to our development in matrescence and that developmental process that Dr. Aurelie Athen talks about.
Right.
So she says we talk about change biologically.
Yep.
We talk about change psychologically. We
yep.
have change spiritually,
yep.
politically, and yep. culturally or socially too. So amazing. All of these five different areas are areas that we are experiencing change and development and growth in our matrescent journey. So I loved that because I can see it from an occupational therapist perspective.
Yeah.
We talk about identity and we talk about meaningful life and satisfaction and all that type of thing. And when we assess whoever our client is, we look at personal factors,
mm-hmm.
which Aurelie Athen talks about. We look at environmental factors, which is this political, social, cultural space that we're in.
Yeah.
And then we look at occupational factors too.
So
and
cool.
In entering motherhood, we experience change in all of those domains. So yeah.
I love it.
So, yeah, it is a developmental process like adolescence.
Mm-hmm.
We've been through one before. We've had breakouts. We've had moodiness. We've been trying to work out our place in the world, our friendship groups, all that kind of thing. So Aurelie Athen as well likens matrescence to adolescence. And
that's cool. What a good analogy.
Yeah. I found the term through Nikki McCann at the Dear Mama Project, and I did her alignment course, and that was kind of the catalyst for me to move forward with it all.
So cool. I love that. And I think that just is so much validation to your experience in becoming a mom and that transition as well, because I know it shook me. Like I had no idea that obviously you prepare for like physical change and you prepare for like tiredness and not being able to have as much spare time and things like that. I definitely didn't prepare for like the loss of identity.
Mm.
And I definitely didn't prepare for the change on my perspective on like everything that I thought I like knew or believed in or supported suddenly shifted. So I remember when I saw that term, I was like, wow, that makes so much sense. It really does change
your
experience, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Now, obviously a lot of what you do is you deal with like overwhelm in motherhood from like a sensory perspective, I guess. And I'd love to chat about that because I know even from looking at the workshop that we did, like there were so many people on there and I was like, this is so cool. Like people are getting educated and like seeing what that means to them and getting support, which is awesome. But I know that it was something again, that was like, so like eye-opening and foreign to me. So overwhelming motherhood, obviously we hear about a lot and we can think about it from like, I don't know, just the stuff that we have to manage in the day and having no spare time. But I guess a lot of that does translate into like sensory overload too, right? Mm-hmm. I'd love to explore like, why does that happen? Like what's going on?
Yeah. Well, there is a lot going on.
Like yes.
Said it, right? So, yeah, when I talk about overwhelm, what I love about the sensory component of it is it's something tangible. Like it's something that is like physical that you can pick kind of through some exploration exactly what it is that's kind of triggering you or where your thresholds are kind of at. And then you can implement like physical, tangible things to support you. So when I talk about overwhelm, what I'm talking about there is like this irritability that we experience in motherhood. It might show up as anger, short-temperedness. It might show up as like feeling touched out, don't want someone on my feet, like feeling
the feet every time.
Feeling like really wound up, you know, like just operating from a state of, well, it is, it's operating from a state of fight or flight.
Interesting.
Response. Yeah. So I talk about overwhelm from a psychosensory perspective.
Mm.
I can't talk about one without the other. No. And so I guess as humans, we are sensory beings, right? Mm. Like our sensory system literally is designed to make sense of the world around us.
Yeah.
You know, be monitoring the environment for threats and working out how to respond to those threats.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to talk about the nervous system a little bit.
Yes,
so,
please. I would love to.
Yeah, and I'll try and keep this really succinct. So within our nervous system, that's our system that basically controls what our body does and what our body processes and the information that comes in.
Mm-hmm.
So within our nervous system, we've got our central nervous system, which is our brain and our spinal cord, mm-hmm. and then we've got our peripheral nervous system, which is all of our neurons that go within and without our brain and spinal cord, so sending information in and up to our brain and sending information out. Within that peripheral nervous system, we've got our somatic system, which is our motor and our sensory neurons. So our sensory neurons, which is our sensory system, is that picking up of that information in, processing it in the brain and the central nervous system, out to the motor neurons to work out what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So an example of that is if we're in the kitchen cooking and we put our hand on a hot plate or a stove, our sensory neurons pick up that we've detected a threat, we've picked up something hot, go straight to our brain through our motor neuron tells our body to move our hand off the heat. That's how that kind of feedback loop works. Cool. Yeah. So within the peripheral nervous system, we also have our autonomic nervous system, which is basically automatic. It's the automatic things, like it's our breathing, our heart rate.
Mm-hmm.
It's also responsible for our fight or flight response. Right.
Interesting.
So we're all wired to observe the environment for threats, and threats are in the eye of the perceiver. So our thoughts can be threatening to us, and through our sensations, through our sensory system, the sensations around us can be threatening to us.
Yeah.
So we each have like a unique sensory threshold, or a cup or a jug, for example.
Yeah.
And so we each have a tolerance for the different senses, how much we can actually absorb within our sensory system before our cup is full and we start to experience impairment or difficulty with our capacity in being able to process the information that's coming through. So like you say, and like so many mothers that I talk about, that overwhelm that we experience, that sensory overload, is often met at the end of the day.
Yes. You know, it always is for me. It's dinner time.
It's dinner time. So, right, at dinner time, what's going on for us at dinner time?
Yeah.
We've been awake all day. Possibly we've been awake for a lot of the night,
like
as
4
well.
a.m. onwards.
Yeah. Our day starts early. I'm dealing with that now at the moment too, with toddlers, I might add. So, you know, our day might depend, no matter what's happened at night, we're on the go. As soon as we're awake, our body is processing sensory information. We're also having thoughts, psychological thoughts around whatever it is that's going on for us too. So in a recent post on my Instagram, I spoke about the different things that contribute to overwhelm and, you know, that mental load that we experience in motherhood, those thoughts, those comparisons, those judgments, that perfect mother myth, all of those thoughts and the stress and the mental load that comes from that actually also impair our brain function too. And when our brain function is impaired, our ability to process information is impaired as well.
Definitely.
So you imagine processing all of these thoughts throughout the day, plus all of the additional sensory information that we're taking on.
So much.
As moms. Yeah. So there's more noise, there's more chaos. We might be looking at more things. You know, before becoming a mom, we might have had a beautifully curated
aesthetically
home
pleasing
neutral colours
so
and nothing out of place, and we might have thought that we would never have all of those bright coloured plastic things in our house.
My life.
Yeah, all of a sudden
flooded.
That's what you're looking at,
and they all make noise, they all sing in unison whilst flashing.
Yes, and it's loud, and the kids are, you know, kids or babies or you know, whatever it might be, there's a lot more noise, there's a lot more visual input, there's a lot more competing priorities that we're dealing with too. So there's there is so much that our body is processing.
Yes.
And when we get towards the end of the day, that sensory cup of ours is often it's hit the threshold or it's above the threshold. So it's a lot easier for us to flip our lid, enter yes. that fight or flight mode. Our body is literally going, stop, something's got to change.
Yeah.
And that's when we experience that.
That dysregulation.
Yeah, that dysregulation.
Doesn't that make so much sense? Like, ugh. And yeah, it makes so much sense to me that it's at the end of the day. Like when you said that, I was like, it's always at dinner time for me. Like I swear it's the feet. It's the feet while I'm cooking dinner.
It's dinner time for a lot of moms. It's like bedtime too. Like trying to get kids to bed at night. Cause that there's a lot of the psychological component mixed up in that too, you know,
like knowing that you might be in for a rough night and then bedtime is tough. And as well as that, it's like, I know a lot of the times, and this could be a really good segue, is like, I know a lot of the times when I'm talking with clients and they're having difficulties around bedtime, they've often had difficulties with sleep through the whole day. And there's a lot of anxiousness that comes with that when their baby's not sleeping well. And we hear so much noise about baby sleep and what it should look like. And for a lot of people, it's just not realistic to have like this unicorn baby that follows by the clock, exact nap times for perfect lengths. So they've got that kind of stress going and they're trying to work that out and they've kind of battled through that the whole day. And then they're coming into bedtime and they might already be feeling anxious because they know they're going to be up overnight and they're tired already and they're exhausted from the day. And then their baby has a meltdown at bedtime and is screaming and crying. And that can sometimes send people a little bit into the overwhelm zone. I know it does even with me. Like I was talking on my story recently about how poor little Theo's had such a burst of separation anxiety and he has been so upset at bedtime for the last 2 weeks and he's gotten better now, thank goodness. But like we were in there for like an hour and a half to 2 hours at a time, just like trying to calm him down, trying to get him to sleep. And I felt that overwhelm as well. From the sensory perspective, I think for sure, because he has such a piercing scream. And then also just thinking about, oh my gosh, for me, it was like knowing all the things that I had to do when he was meant to go to sleep that has now been pushed back 2 hours. Yeah. And that can be overwhelming. So like, are there some specific things that we can do to help when we are feeling that sensory overwhelm? Like, are there tools and strategies and things that we can do if we feel ourselves kind of moving into that overwhelm? Because as well, like, as you would know, I'm sure, and people have probably heard me talk about on this podcast a lot, is that babies are such co-regulators. So it can be tough because if we're overwhelmed and dysregulated, it's really hard to calm and regulate them. So do you have like some strategies that we can use if we are feeling that like sensory overwhelm and we can recognize it? Like, what do we do when we start to see that happen?
Yes. Well, firstly, I want to say I share that exact same story as you, and I have been there with the sleep thing and the misinformation and the expectations and all that kind of thing. And yeah, there's lots of work to be done to unpack that I guess. Yeah. I guess a couple of things that come to mind for me in regards to that overwhelm, particularly at that time of day, is like you have already picked it. You know when your cup is full. Like you've already said, it's at dinner time. It's at dinner time for me every night. I know that that is a time that I get dysregulated or overwhelmed. So if we know that, we can implement some strategies to help empty some of that sensory information out of our cup before entering time of the day. Yeah. So you've got more tolerance for the sensory stuff that's coming in. So whatever that might be for you, and I don't like to be prescriptive in regards to like calming or alerting strategies for the nervous system, but you know, it might be if you're about to get into preparing dinner, stepping outside away from the noise and the visuals that are going on for 10 to 15 minutes to collect yourself and to collect your thought, taking some deep breaths or doing something that you enjoy, doing something for yourself, having a good conversation with somebody, but just picking some couple of little things that you can do that you know will help ground you. In that state of dysregulation, I often talk about like the hierarchy of risk control, which comes from my occupational rehab days.
Very cool.
If you are picking up on something that's too much, it's too much noise, I'm looking at too much, it's too bright, whatever it is, our triggers are our teachers. So if we're picking up on what it is that is too much for us. How can we eliminate it?
Yes.
If we can't eliminate it, how can we move ourselves away from it? How can we perhaps substitute it for something else? Like, I know I'm really sensitive to auditory information, right? Like my kids and the noise and the TV and the toys and all that kind of thing.
All the things.
That triggers me. But I can also, when I'm working or when I'm doing something creative, I like to have particular type of noise in the background.
That
I
is
like
so
to have calming music. So on one end, I've got this particular type of noise, this frequency, this intensity, this tone that aggravates my nervous system when I've reached that tolerance. But in the same respect, a different type of noise is actually really calming and alerting for my nervous system.
Clever.
Yeah. So sometimes at dinner time, for example, I will pop in one of my little earphones.
Yes.
And I will just have some kind of calming music going on in the background. We talk about deep breathing a lot. Everyone talks about taking deep breaths, but there is a science behind it. When our fight or flight system is activated, we are typically breathing more rapidly.
Yes,
right?
Very
now,
true.
Now, our brain and our body are really smart, and our brain and body have receptors that actually monitor our breathing rate to tell our brain whether or not we need to continue in this state of fight or flight if this threat is still present, or whether we can calm it and return it to kind of homeostasis. And so we can kind of physiologically trick our body into thinking that there's not so much of a threat. So by consciously taking 5 or 10 deep breaths, so that's like breathing in through your nose for the count of five, breathing out through your mouth for the count of five or more if you can, for 5 or 10 times, those receptors in your body are picking up that, my body is actually starting to feel safe,
right?
And so it's dialing down that fight or flight response.
Very clever.
And I guess another thing that, you know, is really important from a psychological perspective that personally I find really useful is self-compassion. Kristen Neff does a lot of work on self-compassion, and, you know, part of that overwhelm that comes at dinner time, that comes at bedtime, like you've mentioned, is those anxious thoughts, the anxiety around what the night's going to be like, the stress, the competing priorities, there's so much going on, we're tired, we're exhausted, like it's hard.
It is.
It is hard.
It's a lot.
So calling that out, like, this is, I'm feeling overwhelmed. This is really hard for me. And then giving yourself some of this common humanity, like, and you might be talking out loud, you're, you know, a role model for your kids to go, this is really hard for me. Oh, I'm feeling so stressed. Everyone feels like this sometimes. This is actually really common. I'm not alone. Suffering is part of life is something that Kristen Neff says a lot. And then what is it that, you know, you need to hear in that moment? Is it, is it, it's okay, Sarah, once they're asleep, you've got time to yourself, or you know, you've got 20 minutes until bedtime, or I've just got to get through this? Or is it this fierce self-compassion around protecting yourself against those thoughts, challenging them, like it's okay, like this is normal for my kids to be like this, or you know, like what is it that you need to hear at that time? I don't know, does that answer your question?
It really does. It's really helpful. Yeah. And I know, and it was just like a light bulb moment for me when you were talking about that, because like a lot of what I talk to clients about when they're feeling that overwhelmed when settling babies, like let's just pop in some headphones. If that sound like the noise of baby crying is too much, so that you can stay calm and grounded. Not because we don't want to hear our children when they're upset, of course, but just sometimes that can just tangibly help to like down regulate. And that was just a strategy that I did myself without really understanding much behind. But even like when you're talking about that calming music, I'm like, gosh, I do that too. Like anytime I'm doing sleep logs, sometimes I'm a big empath for sure. And I know that I can sometimes feel like, oh, this poor mom, or like, gosh, this was a really hard day. And that can stress me out. So something that I've just been naturally doing is just putting on like lo-fi YouTube tracks, which is like the day spa music. And it just helps to calm me. I don't know why. But now that you've mentioned it, like that fight or flight, I think there's a lot to be said about finding those strategies. Mm. And like, isn't outside just so grounding? Like, I know I always talk to clients as well, like if you're feeling, I know witching hours, like with like little ones who are really small can be so intense. Mm. Like, let's just pop them in the carry and go for a walk. Like, nature is magic. Nature. Yeah. Beautiful. So a lot of that is so helpful. Yeah. And like, something I see a lot is that we experience this overwhelm, and something I felt myself, like you experience this overwhelm, you have that response. So for me, like when the day I found your thing and I was like, oh my gosh, this makes so much sense. Gosh, I'd had a crazy day. And I was like trying to make dinner, had both the kids. I was trying to voice note a client at the same time. And I tried to do it like 7 or 8 times. And I was like stressed because I knew they were waiting for a response. And I was trying to cook the boys dinner at the same time. And Oscar just came up and stood on my feet. And I was like, buddy, you can't stand on my feet. And he just hit me really hard and goes, I want to stand on your feet. And I was like, boom. Like gone. I'm gone. Yes. I was like, oh my gosh. And then I spiraled, like obviously like rapture and repair. Like we went back and I was like, Oscar, I'm so sorry. Like I was feeling really overwhelmed. It wasn't right that I got angry at you. I'm so sorry, bud. Like love you. Connected, all that good stuff. But then for like the next 2 hours, I spiraled into like this cycle of like, oh my gosh, Claire, like, you know, look, you're prioritizing clients of your own children. Now you've yelled at your 3-year-old for just wanting to have contact with you because you were trying to text a client. Like, where are your priorities? Like, you're torn in too many directions. Like, you're doing a terrible job at being a mom because you're juggling work. And like, now he's gone to bed and you've yelled at him and all this stuff. And I was like, I feel like the worst human in every aspect. And I was like, this poor client never got a text response because I was dealing with the meltdown. And then when I like finally got them down to bed, it had been like 3 hours. And I was like, she'd sent me like 2 other messages. And I was like, oh my gosh, like I missed them all because he was so emotional. So then you spiral into like, oh my gosh, I haven't done the right thing by clients. And that tension, I think, kind of comes back to that perfect mother myth, right? And that thing that you have to be like everything and perfectly at all times. And I know so many people, even just in the DMs, have just kind of reached out and been like, oh my gosh, I feel like such a failure because of this, or I absolutely am losing my mind at bedtime and I feel so guilty. Like, what is this perfect mother myth we all have? Like, what in the world? Where is this? It's a thing though, isn't it?
Yeah. Dr. Sophie Brock talks about the perfect mother myth. Mm. And she, if you're not following Dr. Sophie Brock,
she's amazing.
Follow Dr. Sophie Brock. Yeah. She's incredible. But gosh, just firstly, like that's tough, Claire. Like that is a hard moment. And we all go through that too. But you've, you know, like there's so much to that overwhelm feeling. Yeah. What I'm hearing is that there's lots of thoughts and there's lots going on and there's lots tied up into these expectations. And Sophie also talks about this career conundrum, right? It's exactly what's going on, this conundrum between caring for my child and having a career. Yeah. And where do we find the balance? I forget where I was going with that, but like it's all normal, but it took this sensory input to really make you flip your lid, because it got to that time of the day for you.
It did. And the feet. It was the feet.
The feet on you. Yes. So to go to your question about the perfect mother myth, it's essentially Sophie Brock talks about it being this all-pervasive myth, this social construct of motherhood that we have internalized, these internalized beliefs and expectations that we have obtained over life, right? Over our own experience, our own families, our culture, social media, what we see posted, Hollywood footage, the expectations that, you know, people around us have on motherhood too. And it's like it's a pedestal. It's a mother on a pedestal, which if you, you know, do exercises that Sophie suggests, like, you know, trying to come up with what your ideal mother is, what idealistic motherhood looks like for you, and then trying to kind of name where each of the different things come from, usually you'll find that your perfect mother myth is actually a combination of 7, 15, 20 mothers whose highlight reel you've seen.
Oh, it is so real. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
And misinformation too, like particularly around infant sleep, temperament, yeah. all that type of thing. There is a lot of misinformation out there that I absolutely think sets mothers up to feel like failures, because
it's so real.
If that's the information that we're being fed in pregnancy,
yep.
And in early mothering, and they're the, I guess, talking about sleep here, they're the yeah. things that get asked of us when we have new babies too, right? Are they sleeping through the
Literally.
Night yet? You know, like it exacerbates this myth. So,
it does.
Yeah, I'm big on normal infant development, sleep, temperament, yeah.
Yes.
all that type of thing, because
yeah.
I don't have unicorn babies, and I
nope.
you know, I actually tried for a long time, like I tried for a good 3 years to make my child fit,
yeah,
and it never worked, but it took breaking down that myth, it took educating myself, it took understanding what was going on
yeah.
naturally and normally
yeah.
to give myself the compassion to know that
I love it.
It's actually normal. Yeah,
it is. And it's like in every other aspect of life with our little ones, we would never want them to fit a mold, and we'd never want them to be restricted to be just one thing and one way. I know that what part of my journey was like the irony that they have to be this one thing when it comes to sleep. And you're right. I think that leads to a lot of that perfect mother myth and overwhelm when it's not going as expected, which
yeah.
no one's here for. But what I'm yes. hearing you say is like that overwhelm from the sensory perspective is so normal, so normal. And we all experience it probably on different levels if we have different thresholds. Is that right? Like I definitely
right.
feel my threshold is low.
Yeah.
I definitely think I'm more. I observe this even with Josh. Like we could be in the same situation, and I'll be like up here, and he's like so zen, and he's like, "Oh, this
yeah.
is fine. Like, let yeah. them walk all over my toes." And I'm like, if my foot gets touched again,
yeah,
chop it off.
What's so interesting about that? My husband and I talk about that too
yeah.
as well all the time. Like the other morning, my kids were at each other and they were loud. And I just looked at my husband and I said, "Does this not get to you?" I know the answer. Like, I know it doesn't get to him. He's like, "No." I'm like, "Oh, it's like in my brain instantly, I'm like flipping this
lid." Me too. Yes.
But women in pregnancy, like
yeah.
their brain changes as
oh.
well. Like we have these little, Dr. Oscar Sarilak talks about it a lot. He wrote the postnatal depletion cure. You know, our brain has these upgrades. Actually,
yeah.
we have upgrades in visual recognition,
yes.
in auditory and olfactory processing. So
mm-hmm.
we're actually upgrading our ability to process this sensory information.
Right.
He talks about it as being upgrades to those care, so nurturance
right.
and aggression or protection parts of
which
the brain.
Which makes so much sense from an evolutionary
yeah.
perspective. Like, of course
exactly.
we do. Like, we're hardwired to be
yeah.
that way.
Yeah,
society's
exactly.
failed us though, hey?
Sadly, but I feel like we are, you know, we're at an interesting time now with
yes.
the benefits of social media and the information that's out there
yeah.
now. I think we're going to see a big shift, and it's really exciting to be part of that.
Isn't it just? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I love it, because it definitely, you can feel that even just this matrescence movement, not movement, I don't want to call it a movement, but people like yourself who are literally working in and through supporting mothers in motherhood. Like you go back like 10 years, even like, I don't feel like that existed. I mean,
was
I don't know. I was like, well, 20, but
yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't think it was there. I really don't think it was. So it's an exciting time to be alive, even if
so.
The shift is slow, but it's been
yeah.
exciting.
Yeah.
So when we are experiencing this overwhelm from the sensory perspective, there's obviously those practical things we can do, giving ourselves some grace. But let's say we feel like, gosh, we might be a little bit out of, like, maybe we're hypersensitive. Maybe it's something that's really problematic for us. Maybe we're really struggling with a lot of this sensory overwhelm. Is there an avenue to kind of work through that more closely if we were to kind of notice that in and of ourselves?
What do you mean? Like, is there
like,
things that we can be doing?
Is there things that we can be doing? Is there support like out there? Like, do you offer support for things like that?
Oh, what a nice segue for that.
Isn't it, Charles?
Yeah.
I didn't even plan that out.
No, yes. I mean, there are quite a few OTs out there actually that offer, well, OTs are in the business of sensory support.
Yes,
right?
Which is great.
Which is wonderful. So lots of OTs work in sensory processing for things like sensory processing disorder and all those types of neurodivergent conditions. But I like to say that I work for the general middle because it's...
I love it.
You know, we live in a world with kids and mothers where we're either flourishing and we're doing really, really well.
Yeah.
We're the celebrated woman or the celebrated child, or we meet this clinical diagnostic criteria for needing clinical support. But in matrescence and motherhood, for our kids, that we're all going through this deep experience.
Absolutely.
Right? So, yeah, I, as Sarah Ashton OT, offer sensory support services to my clients. So on my website you can still get access to the replay if you want any more.
Oh, it was so good. I loved
that. That replay had, thank you so much. That meant so much that you were there and that you
I loved it so much.
That replay had like some self-guided activities that you can do to really, I guess, explore your own sensory system. So working out what your preferences are moving through the different senses, what your preferences are, working out what is alerting to your nervous system, what is calming to your nervous system, so that when you're starting to notice those feelings of overwhelm, you can go to the things that work particularly for you. And then as an OT, we do specific sensory assessments as well that are more it's a one-on-one service. I do what's called the sensory profile, where you go through, it's a standardized assessment, you complete a questionnaire, and what you get from that is an idea of whether you are sensory seeking, sensory sensitive, sensory avoidant, or whether you like are low in your registration of sensory information.
Yeah.
And those questions help me and my clients to kind of work out preferences at a deeper level and how we might actually use our particular preferences or our sensitivity or our avoidance or our registration to help regulate our system. Yeah. I mean, it's normal, I want to say too. Like, it's normal to experience this overwhelm and dysregulation, but having just some tools and strategies can be really useful.
Absolutely. The world of difference to be able to kind of manage it, which is great. And I'll link your website and your Instagram and the replay in the show notes so everyone can access them. Because I think it's so helpful and so beneficial. That was wonderful.
Thank you.
Do you have any other thoughts or parting words?
Look, not really. I think we've covered so much of it.
I
think, what I really just wanted to say, like, our experience of motherhood is normal, and this experience of sensory overload is normal, and overwhelm is normal. But if it's too much, like, seek support. There 100%. Is so much support out there to support women in being mothers. We spoke about, like, so much of it too boils down to the psychological component of the expectations that we have on ourselves. And it's not either or. It's not these psychological components and these sensory components. It's both.
It's,
you know,
all
like
the same.
It's all of them. And if I can leave you with anything from both of those perspectives, it's that our trigger, I said it earlier, like, our triggers are our biggest teachers.
Yeah.
So whatever it is, if we are conscious about what's going on for us from a sensory perspective or what thought it is that we're having in that particular moment, that can tell us a lot about what is threatening to our nervous system and what we are perceiving as a threat to.
So cool. I love that so much. Thank you so much for chatting. I absolutely loved it, and I love everything you do, and I cannot wait to see how you just continue to support mothers, because I think it's just so important that people have that support and get that message out there. So thanks for joining.
Oh, thanks, Claire. It's been such a pleasure chatting, and I love following you along.
Yay.
I wish I knew where you were 5 years ago.
I wish I knew where I was 5 years ago as well. I needed me.
Oh my gosh, but isn't it funny? Like, I often say this too, like, I feel like a little bit of an imposter, because even though we do these, all of these things, and we educate and we support other mothers, we also don't do the important things too.
Oh my gosh,
and that's normal. But I guess the more you are aware of it, the quicker you're able to recognize what's going on for yourself.
Exactly, exactly, which is so cool. I love it so much. Thank you for chatting.
Thanks for having me.
I'll tag you all below.
Thank you.
No worries.